Welcome to It's About Florida. Florida is halfway through its legislative session, but the House and Senate have a lot to do before they leave the Capitol. In addition to passing a budget, the legislature still has to work out a way to revise the state's death penalty, figure out a gambling deal, and of course, iron out a new budget for the upcoming fiscal year. Ashley Tressel has the story.
House Speaker Steve Crisafulli and Senate President Andy Gardner took care of their priorities early, with Governor Scott signing bills the first week supporting water conservation and job opportunities for people with disabilities. Crisafulli hinted at tax breaks before session, mentioning Representative Matt Gaetz's Finance and Tax Committee.
Opportunities include more tax relief for hardworking families. I think you'll see a significant tax package come out of Chair Gaetz's committee this year. We'll be embracing new technology and cutting regulations that discourage competition.
Gardner mentioned education in his pre-session remarks, promising increased K-12 funding. And he kept that promise. Republican Representative Manny Diaz is pleased with the amount.
This is a historic level of funding, which is $105 higher per student than the 2007-2008 levels, which everyone always speaks of.
The House and Senate have passed their versions of the next state budget, but now they have to work out the differences. The Senate budget includes $250 million for attracting businesses, while the House includes a $1 billion tax cut plan. But Crisafulli acknowledges that package is just a first draft.
I'm here to tell you it's not going to pass off the floor at the end of the session because we have to go sit down with our Senate partners and have an honest discussion about looking forward and understanding what this package means for our state in the future.
The House budget bans spending on Planned Parenthood. Both budgets cut positions in the Department of Health. Other upcoming decisions include health care, gambling, and the death penalty. The House wants to repeal Certificate of Need for hospitals, which requires state approval to build or expand. The Senate wants a reform instead. The two chambers are also split on death penalty legislation. The Senate wants a unanimous jury decision to recommend death, while the House says 9 jury members is enough. State Attorney Brad King sides with the House, saying a unanimous decision could be asking too much.
Jurors have a hard time actually voting to impose death on another human being. It's a hard thing.
A House gaming bill is also still in play that would create a new Seminole Compact. Republican Representative Jose Felix Diaz expects they'll make a deal in the end.
I'm not concerned. I really am not. I'm optimistic that there's a bill that can pass. I feel like it's in the best interest of Florida to have a deal, but I'm not going to, okay a deal that's bad just because the money's good.
The Seminole Tribe of Florida would pay $3 billion to offer more casino games and slot locations. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Ashley Tressel.
Early in the legislative session, the Florida House, State Senate, and Governor Rick Scott were all about cleaning out some unfinished business. They approved a bill revamping state water policy and proposals aimed at improving the lives of people with disabilities. Lawmakers sounded optimistic about this legislative session, and they spoke about trying to set a new tone. So how are they doing with that? Both chambers moved quickly to get their respective budget proposals out to the chamber floors, but usually where there's money, there are problems. And a big one is the $1 billion difference between the two chambers when it comes to cutting taxes. There are also policy differences that could make their way into the sausage-making festival that is the budget process. The session is halfway over, and while it may seem there's not a lot left to do, there are still several issues that could pop up to trip up the Florida legislature. Joining us in the studio today are the News Service of Florida's Brandon Larrabee and WFSU reporter Jim Ash.
Brandon and Jim, thank you all both so much for coming here on It's About Florida. I want to start off by rewinding a bit. We're here. We're a little bit past the midway of the 2016 legislative session. And so far, it's been really mild. We haven't seen any of the dust-ups and the blow-ups and the disagreements that sort of tanked the session last year. And both House Speaker Steve Crisafulli and Senate President Andy Gardner started off pretty much by issuing olive branches. They said, we want to have a mild session. How are they living up to that?
Well, a lot of this is visual, and you'll notice that the first post-floor session gaggle they had with reporters afterwards, they were together. And I think that was a significant signal. Now, if you fast forward a little bit and take a look at what's happened since, you'll notice that there's been an awful lot of contentious legislation on the House side that has gone up and off the floor that's now parked and waiting on the Senate side.
Gotcha. And, you know, you talk about that contentious legislation. I think specifically about the gun bills that are stalling out. There's a senator who has said he's not going to take them up. Brandon, are we seeing this sort of kumbaya start to fragment, or no worries yet?
Well, I don't think there's any need for worries yet, but I do think the big issues that tend to divide the chambers are still coming up. I mean, they just passed their budgets, and that is always the flashpoint, is how do you spend the money? That's what blew up the session last year, was how you dealt with the budget. Now, they don't have the big outstanding issue that they had last year with the hospital funding, but they still do have a lot of the tough issues to get forward. We're really just getting to the point now where you would expect some of the friction to start to emerge, I think. And so I think it's a little bit too early to say it's all good yet. They're going to have a much better session this time around. But certainly, like Jim said, they're making all of the right visual and spoken cues right now.
So let's go, you know, let's peel back some of the water. Obviously a big disagreement. Both of them have passed spending plans that are about $80 billion. But there's a $1 billion question hanging out there, right? And it is what to do about these tax cuts. So that's the first flashpoint. That's really kind of one of the main ones is, well, how do you get to that extra $1 billion. And the House has put forward kind of a series of things it wants to do, some sales tax holidays, some stuff for businesses. But the Senate is saying, maybe we can take a little bit of the load off of local counties and schools and cut back on some of the taxes that go for schools, and we pay for them. So, I mean, that's flashpoint number one. How is this argument going to play out for the next 30-odd days?
Well, I think that's really one of the key issues here is this issue of the tax cut, because it's Scott's top priority as well. The Senate does not want to go anywhere near $1 billion. Senator Tom Lee, who chairs the budget process in the Senate, said that $1 billion would be fiscally irresponsible. And it's kind of hard to back off of that later in negotiations. The Senate has also thrown in, like you talked about, the education property tax issue. That's very important to Senator Don Gates, who's a former president of the Senate. On the other hand, the House has said they would be okay with that maybe if it were done in a certain manner to make sure that the money got back to property owners. It's sort of three-dimensional chess at this point, how you move all these pieces and bring it in for a landing. And then, of course, if you don't get to $1 billion, does Scott veto the budget? I mean, how far is he willing to take that? So that to me is the big outstanding issue right now.
Well, and we've heard rumblings, too, about the possibility that lawmakers may want to get done early enough so that if the governor does veto the budget, they're still here, they can override.
I think that's the nuclear option, and I'm not sure it would go that far in an election year. But the signal's there. I mean, the governor's always difficult to predict. He's weighing in a little bit more this session than he was last session. And there are some people who are arguing it blew up because a lack of leadership from the governor's side.
You know, he's been running ads all about the Seminole Gaming Compact. Early on, a lot of lawmakers pretty much wrote this thing off as kind of a non-issue. They really didn't want to deal with it this session. But now you've had at least proposals that have been rolled out on the House and Senate to sort of start codifying elements of this thing into some sort of law. Is this going to be an issue going forward, or is it still kind of a non-starter for lawmakers?
I don't know if it's a non-starter. I mean, one of the things that happens though whenever you start talking about gambling bills is once you open the door to gambling, every gambling-related issue that everybody wants to deal with comes in. You have a lot of special interests. You have a lot of counties that want certain things for their counties and not for other counties. And I don't know that this is something that, you know, particularly a legislature with a lot of conservative Republicans is going to go, this is something we have to get done before we go home in November. So I don't think it's something that could blow up the session. Is it something that could die? I think it's quite possible it could. I don't know what the odds are.
Is it already dying, I think, is the question. I mean, you've had several people who have said parts of this compact are non-starter. We already know that Gardner doesn't like decoupling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he has said, you know, these Hialeah and these racetracks made promises to their communities, and now they're, you know, saying, well, we cannot run the races. You know, we can just have the slots. So, you know, there are parts of this that are getting pushback. I think Chris Ofuli has spoken out against, too, the issue of, you know, the local referendums.
Mm-hmm.
So, and those are both in this compact that, you know, some counties with local referenda that have approved slots won't get them, others will. So, kind of in the air.
That just proves how difficult the argument is. I mean, consider that there are still people in the legislature right now who don't consider Florida a gambling state. And when you can't agree on that, it doesn't bode well for people who think that there's going to be a compact that's passed.
One of the things that has come up, it seems like we have this never-ending resurrection when it comes to guns. We started off session with, I think, three separate proposals about guns. We had a Stand Your Gun bill. We had guns on college campuses. Those are the big two that jump out to me. And then there was one more. But early on, one of those bills appeared to have died in a House committee. And now it seems like it's jumping back up. When it comes to guns and the legislature this session, do they feel a little bit schizophrenic to you guys, or is there something else going on here?
Well, I think part of what's going on is you're going into an election year. And in a lot of these districts, particularly your rural districts, your more conservative districts, gun legislation is popular. You don't want to be crosswise with the NRA. On the other hand, you do have some moderate senators and even in the Republican Party, who aren't comfortable with those bills. Miguel Diaz de la Portilla, whose committee oversees a lot of these bills, is not somebody who's the NRA's favorite Republican legislator, I think. So I don't know that it's schizophrenic. I think you have two different dynamics going on. In the House, you have a lot of lawmakers who want to push these bills. In the Senate, you have a few lawmakers and one with a lot of influence over it who doesn't want these bills to go very far. There's also the Senate has always been a little bit hesitant about things like campus carry. Former Senator John Thrasher, who's now president of FSU, even when he was in the legislature, he didn't like campus carry. And he was not exactly what you would call a liberal. So I think it's on one side of the legislature, a lot of these bills are going to pass. The question is the Senate. And I don't know that there's a groundswell in the Senate. I don't know that that's something that a lot of senators see as must accomplishes.
Is it more of a visual thing? You know, we brought it forward to you. It was there, something, you know, someone can just kind of hang their hats on and say, look, I fought for your Second Amendment.
Well, it's, you know, it. You have to remember this is not partisan. It's not typically Democrat-Republican issue. It's urban-rural. And the urban legislators are more concerned about what they're hearing from the Walt Disney lobbyists and the business lobbyists who are very concerned about open carry and what happens to tourism numbers.
And that can be, you know, some of the hesitant senators, Diaz de la Portilla is from Miami. That, again, it's like Jim's saying, it's more of an urban-rural than a Republican-Democrat split, at least when you get into the Senate, I think.
What about this one issue? And I have got to ask about it because it's so curious to me. For what may be the first time ever, there is a bill that was passed by a House committee that would pretty much ban abortions. It pretty much says no to abortions in any and all forms. It's the first time this thing has ever gotten a hearing, and it has been floating around the legislature now for at least, what, 5 or so years. What changed? Is this sort of a shout out to the one lawmaker who has been sponsoring it to say, hey, you're on your way out. We'll give you a, you know, something to carry out with you. Or are they actually serious about this?
I think there's some element of that. I mean, we're seeing a lot of proposals right now by lawmakers who are termed out that are just kind of getting votes out of House committees, votes out of Senate committees. And it seems almost like a, OK, you know, here we'll give you some, you know, parting gift, like you were saying. On the other hand, we have seen some of these proposals pass in other states. I don't know that it will pass in Florida. You have some Republicans in the Senate. We keep coming back to that because it's one of the big dynamics in the Capitol. You do have some Republicans in the Senate who are a little bit more hesitant about that. I don't know that you could get a majority there. I don't know that they really want a majority. I mean, a lot of these senators are looking at very different districts than they ran in because of the redistricting ruling. And I'm not sure they want to grasp a lot of third rails while they're still trying to get a handle on how things play in their new districts.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point because you're going to see a lot of the more controversial stuff coming out of the House, like abortion and guns, is going to be parked in the Senate for quite a while because even the conservative Republicans in the Senate are going to go back on the trail and find themselves introducing themselves for the first time to a whole bunch of voters that just don't know them. And they don't want to show up on people's doorsteps as the person who wants open carry, as rabid anti-abortion. They're still feeling out the voters, and they're worried about the first impression they're going to make.
So first impressions mean a lot, and obviously they're being very careful about what votes they're going to cast in favor and in opposition to, playing to basically a new audience. Mm-hmm.
And the maps are largely seen as more friendly to Democrats, and so I think that's what's driving a lot of the caution too.
Has being a more moderate chamber hurt the Senate in recent years? You know, I think back to these fights between the House and the Senate that they've had over the past, especially the past 2 years or so, and it seems like the Senate has really sort of come out on the losing end on a lot of really heavy policy issues. They may have won some major battles like blocking pension reform, but sort of overall they seem a little bit weaker.
Well, part of that is also the nature of the Senate. I mean, you have sort of different factions in the Senate, and you're always going to have that. They've tried to change that. You've had a couple of Senate presidents who made a concerted effort to drive the chamber in a more conservative direction on the Republican side, and it just didn't happen. And it's always been like that. It's like that in other states as well. Senators are more independent-minded. They have bigger districts they have to run in, and so they tend to be a little bit more moderate. I also think that if you look at last year's big battle over Medicaid expansion, the Senate was kind of driving counter to the whole Republican ideal. If they had been pushing a more conservative position, it might have boxed the House in. But a lot of House members felt like the politically popular thing to do in their district was to stand up to Medicaid expansion. So some of it's just the issues that the Senate has decided to take on are issues where they were kind of starting out from behind the eight ball.
And you know, the construction of the way our government works is the Senate is the speed bump. You get the wild, big ideas coming from the House side, and the Senate is supposed to be the more deliberative body. You notice in the budget vote, it was split traditionally along party lines in the House. The Senate, it was unanimous, even though there were, you know, big Democratic concerns with that budget document. They put up a united front because, you know, they are a more united faction in the Senate. They have to work more closely together. They have to be less partisan.
There are fewer of them.
There are fewer of them.
So going into the second half of the legislative session, what are the big issues and ideas that are going to be weighing heavily on legislative deliberations? And we're going to take the budget off the table because that's a freebie. So budget aside, what do you guys think are going to be those issues? I'll give you a minute.
The House sent a water bill as an olive branch over. The House sent the bill that President Gardner liked that had to do with unique abilities, sent it over as an olive branch. But now you've got fracking that is the House has also sent over, and it is sitting right now in appropriations. It'll be up to Tom Lee to take that up, and he's going to get pressure, from Garrett Richter and from others to put it on the agenda. And he's got that as a playing card, something else he can use in budget negotiations. I'm sorry, but that's going to be part of it. And that's going to be a big decision he'll have to make. And there's an interesting debate within that issue in that you can vote for a bill like that and say you're still opposed to fracking. because it essentially overlays a set of regulations for that unique type of drilling. However, it's supported by the industry and it's widely viewed up here as a pro-fracking bill. So that's one I'm going to be watching closely just because the politics are fascinating of it, which way they go. That's going to be one of the first big issues.
There's a couple of areas I would kind of look at. One is education. There's sort of a constellation of bills out there on education, on whether or not counties should be able to choose different tests, on how you fund construction for charter schools, whether you crack down on construction costs for local school districts. Those could all kind of congeal into one issue. There could be some effort to reach a deal on those. The House tends to favor some of the construction measures more. The Senate is where the testing bill has gotten at least a little bit of traction. The other issue I would look at is pension reform. The House has sort of taken a couple of modest tweaks to the pension system that the Senate wants and thrown them together in a bill with that would also affect which pension plan employees are sent into if they don't choose one when they enter. That's something that a lot of state unions don't like. And so you could see that emerge as a little bit of a friction point. So those are the two issues I would look at where beyond the budget, those could still be in play. Oh, and by the way, like Jim said, everything is connected in the last days of the legislative session. So the budget could also play into how those are resolved.
Gotcha. Well, Brandon, Jim, thank you all so much for joining us here on It's About Florida.
My pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks to News Service of Florida's Brandon Larrabee and WFSU's Jim Ash. You've been listening to It's About Florida, a production of WFSU-FM. I'm Lynn Hatter. Taylor Cox provides technical assistance. Please join us again next month for more discussion on the issues impacting our state.